So what I'd like to look at today is something that we really haven't looked at much in the past, which is the stories about Siddharim from the era when the Haggadah is being put together. As we know, the Haggadah as we have it, or shall we say the kernel, the core of the Haggadah as we have it, was formed in the generations right after the destruction of the Mikdash. There is very little, if anything, that we have that we know of from Haggadah style from the times of the Beit HaMikdash. We may have some of the questions, the Manishtanam, some of it may be from that period, depending how we read the question about the meat. But there is a very famous story that shows up near the beginning of the Haggadah. Now, I have to preface this by posing the following question. I don't really have a good answer for it. So if anybody out there does, I'm certainly very happy to hear. We begin the evening with all the things that we do, and then we have yachatz, and we say halach manya, and we pour the second cup, and the kid asks questions, and then we don't answer his questions for quite a long time. But we have one line that tells the story, and that's it. And then we describe why it should have an impact on us, because if God hadn't taken us out then, we would still be slaves now, etc. And then we really leave storytelling. And if you look at the passage in front of you, none of it's about the story of Mitzrayim. It's about our obligation to tell the story, and then a story about five sages who told the story all night, and Rav Elazar Azariah, which may have taken that place that same night, and his request to try to get Yitzhak Mitzrayim mentioned every evening. And then it goes on to the four sons, which we've done before, and it goes on from there to the issue of you could possibly tell this story starting on Rosh Chodesh. It's almost like coming to a class, a middle school class or a high school class, and reading the teacher's manual. Because all of these things are really directions for the person in charge. And I really don't know why they're there or why they're said. Interesting to note is that quite a number of those passages do not appear in the old Eretz Yisrael. When I say old, I don't mean 19th century. I mean 4th, 5th century Eretz Yisrael Haggadot that we recovered from the Geniza. The four sons, that whole passage doesn't show up there. The story we're going to take a look at doesn't show up there. And I'm not sure if that's because of the question I asked or for some other reason. In any case, I want to look at this story. So again, right after the kid asked the questions, we have this famous line of Adim Hayinu, which is taken from the Torah, from the answer to the kid we call the wise son. We were slaves to Paro, and God took us out with a strong hand and outstretched arm. And then if God hadn't taken us out, we would still be there. And then we have this line starting right here that, again, is the beginning of the teacher's manual. Even if we're all wise, we're all discerning, we know the whole Torah, and there's another version that adds in, we are all elders. There's a mitzvah to tell the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, and the more you tell the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the better it is. And then we hear a story. This is a very famous story about Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon, who were misubin, which means they were gathered together in a circle and reclining. It's describing the Seder. And they were all misubin in Bnei Brak. Now, that location is going to be something of interest to us. All right, because Bnei Brak, as we learn from numerous sources and also from street names, Bnei Brak is the hometown of Rabbi Akiva. That's an item of interest, which means they are all guests at Rabbi Akiva's Seder. Now, by the way, something that I've never heard asked, but probably some people ask is, well, where are their families? I mean, where is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's wife, who he consulted with about taking the Nesiut? All right. And where is Rabbi Yeshua's kids and Rabbi Eliezer? They've left their family and come for Pesach to Bnei Brak. That's a little bit strange, but that's a minor question. There's some other bigger things going on here, which is that Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Tarfon all at one point or another in their lives lived in the town of Lod. And yet, they're all in Bnei Brak with Rabbi Akiva, who is actually a younger colleague of all of theirs. which is itself a strange move on several levels. Again, the issue of they've all left their families to come to Bnei Brak for the Seder. They are all misubin with Rabbi Akiva in Bnei Brak. And yet, if you look at the list is also weird because the list should put Rabbi Akiva last. Should say Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Tarfon were misubin at Rabbi Akiva's house in Bnei Brak. Rabbi Akiva is the only one of them who lives in Bnei Brak. So there's a whole lot of things about this story that kind of like set off, not exactly alarms, but sort of like little red flags, or we'll call them chartreuse flags, in order to kind of catch our attention that there's something else going on here. Now, parenthetically, Hayu Misubin B'Bnei Brak, everything in the Haggadah is famous. Everything in the Haggadah is famous. You know, we talk about a kid who's kind of a simpleton, and we call him a Ben Tam. And we talk about a chain of events where one, like a sort of a Rube Goldberg thing, and we call it a Haggadah. Right, everything about the Seder is famous, and it's so famous that there is a an intersection on Road 1 near Bnei Brak, which is called Tzomet Misubin. When you listen to Israeli news reports, they'll give you the traffic, and there's a pkak at Tzomet Misubin. And Tzomet Misubin is how do you get to Bnei Brak, and it's called that because of this line in the Haggadah. So, okay, kind of cute. Now, what were they doing? Hayum Saprim B'Yetziat Mitzrayim Kol Oto Halayla. That whole night, they were telling the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Now, this story is clearly here at this point in the Seder, in the Haggadah, to illustrate the line we just said, which is, no matter how sagacious we are, how wise, how discerning, how elderly, how experienced, whatever it is, how wise we are, we still have a mitzvah to tell the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And look at that. The wisest men of the generation that created the Haggadah are all together all night, and they're not saying, I already know this stuff. They're not saying, let's go on to something else. They're not going to sleep. They're up all night until the students come and tell them it's time for morning Shema. Now, there are several problems with this story besides the issue I mentioned about why they all leave their families and they go to Bnei Brak, or aren't they in Lod, and the order of how they're listed, which is that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah are both on record as saying that the Korban Pesach has to be eaten by midnight. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, and Rabbi Yeshua, two of the other members here, are on record as disagreeing and saying Korban Pesach is eaten all night. We're familiar with the Machloket and the Rambam Paskins Chatzot and Tosfot Paskins all night. And reverse, sorry, Rambam Paskins all night like Rabbi Akiva, Tosfot Paskins like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Chatzot. And that's why we or try to get to at least Mrs. Matzah, it's not found if you come in by midnight. Okay, but why are they up all night telling the story? So I once heard a beautiful little explanation, picante, which you could bring to the Seder. It's very nice, which is that they were guests in Rabbi Akiva's house. And Rabbi Akiva's position was that Korban Pesach lasts all night. So therefore, in deference to their host's position, they stayed up all night telling the story, and they didn't say, well, according to my position, at midnight, the whole thing's over, I'm going home. And it's a beautiful ethical message about the proper protocol when you're a guest in someone's house, that you defer to their custom, or when you're in a town, you defer to the custom of the rabbi of that town. Very nice. That's not what's going on here, but it's a very nice message, all right? So we have to figure out what's going on. And then what's even stranger is this next paragraph. Now, by the way, everybody knows this paragraph, and everybody knows this paragraph from the Haggadah, but that's not where it starts. This paragraph here is actually a Mishnah in Masachet Brachot. It has nothing to do with Pesach. This Mishnah here is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. It follows the line, Mazkirin Yetziat Mitzrayim Balelot. We have an obligation to mention the Exodus every night, which is why we add the third paragraph to Shema, in Mariv, even though the third paragraph is about tzitzit, which only applies during the day. And we add it at night because of the last line, we're supposed to mention the Exodus every night. And here's the background. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, Hare ani kiven shivim shana. Now, what's the traditional explanation for Hare ani kiven shivim shana? Right? We all know it. What's the story? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a young man, according to the Bavli 18, according to the Yerushalmi 16, and when they deposed Rabban Gamliel because of the way he treated Rabbi Yeshua, they came to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and said, will you please head the Sanhedrin? And he says, I don't know. Let me ask my wife. So here we've got a guy who's 18 or 16. He's already married. That's not so strange. However, he is already, part of his candidacy is because he's a brilliant teacher. Okay, at 18, could be a prodigy. He's wealthy, so if he needs to do political stuff, he knows how to do it. All right, maybe he inherited his wealth, possibly. And he has yichus, etc. And so they ask him to be head of the Sanhedrin, as the famous story goes in Masachet Brachot Daf Chavchet. He says, let me ask my wife. His wife says to him, they're not going to respect you because you look like a kid. And so overnight, a miracle happens and his hair goes white. And that's why he says, I feel like a man of 70. Right? I'm not really 70. I'm a kid, but I feel like a man of 70. All right. The only problem with that, well, there's two problems with that statement. One of them is the following. Hare ani kiven shivim shana, which now we're saying means I'm a young kid. I've just been named head of the Sanhedrin. And I feel like an old man because I got this white hair. V'lo zachiti, and I have not yet been successful in getting my colleagues to agree to this halacha. Well, the phrase v'lo zachiti sounds like this is something I've been lobbying for quite a while. And I couldn't get this legislation passed that Kriyat Shema in the evening should include the third paragraph until I got this drush of Ben Zoma. So it doesn't sound like this is the new kid on the block. It sounds like this is somebody who's been around for a while. All right, we'll see more about this. And he says, "And again, what's this paragraph doing in the Haggadah? I couldn't get the law passed that we should mention Yitziat Mitzrayim every evening until Shimon ben Zoma came along and gave a drasha. What was his drasha? The pasuk says, you eat matzah and avoid chametz so that you'll remember the leaving Egypt all the days of your life. What did Ben Zoma say it meant? Yumechayacha alone. If it just said the days of your life, you would say that's daytime. Kol yumechayacha, but it says all the days of your life. That word all is there to extend it to even nighttime. And Chachamim, who disagreed with him, said, Yumechayacha ha'olam hazeh. Yimei Chayecha is during this reality. And yes, Rabbi Elazar Nazari actually is older, right? Correct. And so we have this disagreement about how to midrashically pull this pasuk. And Ben Zoma championed the cause that this pasuk is not referring to the world to come, but this pasuk is talking about in this world, in this reality. When do we mention Yitziat Mitzrayim? Every day and every night. Okay, kol yimei chayecha. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, now I've got a drasha to support me, and now I was able to successfully get this. What is this doing here? This has nothing to do with Pesach. So indeed, there is actually a girsa, which you see here, in the Rambam and in others, in their Haggadah. The text they have has this word, and this word changes everything. Because this word, Amar Lahem Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, means this whole story is one thing. It's all one. Which means all the rabbis were sitting in Bnei Brak all night talking about Yitziat Mitzrayim. And at some point during the night, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah turned to them and said, I've been trying so long to get this thing passed. And I wasn't successful until this drasha came along. So I sort of understand why this is here. Because it's part of the same story. The only problem is that when we look at the Mishnah, which is where this starts, there is not one single text that has the word Lahem in it. Not one text, not one manuscript, not one printing, not one version that has the word Lahem in it. It's always Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So what is going on here? Now, along with that, I'm going to add one other component. You look at the names, and if you're familiar with the names and the generation, this is the first generation of Yavneh, there is one name that is noticeably absent. We have Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yoshua, famous, the first generation after the Churban. You have Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, who is evidently a colleague of theirs and who then takes over the Sanhedrin. Rebbe Akiva, who is actually a younger student, and Rebbe Tarfon, who is of that earlier generation. Rebbe Tarfon himself, by the way, was a Kohen in the Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi Yoshua himself was a Levi in the Beit HaMikdash. All right, they worked in the Beit HaMikdash. Who's missing from this picture? very famous. Who is missing from this picture?
Gamaliel himself.
Gamaliel, the one who was deposed. That whole story is not here. Okay, and we're going to find him. We will find him. Okay, so you noticed in the questions, these are Jason's questions. Thank you. Okay, again, the question is, who are these? Why are these five chachamim here? Were they alone, right? Words from Gamliel. Why are they engaging at Sibur Tzivot Mitzrayim all night? Why did the students say it's time for Shema as a way to indicate that they should stop, as opposed to saying it's sunrise or some other time, right? Again, why is this story in the Haggadah? It seems to be part of the teacher's guide. It seems to be part of the teacher's guide. Why is it in the Haggadah? Now, I mentioned I don't have an answer. I'm going to suggest an answer here. Why does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mention his age? I feel like I'm 70. What is that about? Why is the Mishnah brought here at all? And then at the end of the Mishnah, Chachamim disagreed. And what did they say? Yimei Chayacha is this world. Kol Yimei Chayacha means the Messianic era. Even in the Messianic era, we'll still mention the Exodus. Now, that's part of the Mishnah. So if I'm reading the Mishnah, that's there because it's part of the Mishnah. But they didn't quote the whole Mishnah here because the first line of the Mishnah is missing. So why did they quote the last line of the Mishnah? It's unneeded. So we've got ourselves not four, but eight questions about this, along with some of the others that I threw out. But I want to start us by showing you a Tosefta. The Tosefta, and by the way, important to note, this story, this very famous story, so famous that it got us an intersection in Israel, Misubin, shows up nowhere else in rabbinic literature. It does not show up in a Mishnah, does not show up in a Brit, does not show up in a Tosefta, not show up in a Mechilta or in a Sifri, does not show up anywhere else except in the Haggadah. You want to search high and low, you will not find this story of the five sages in Bnei Brak anywhere. All right? Now, the Tosefta, on the other hand, tells us the following story. Ma'aseh, and this is the Tosefta in Arvei Psachim, Ma'aseh Rabban Gamliel Uzakenim. So Rabban Gamliel and the elders. Right? Sounds like the group. Right? Yes, I know. It sounds like right, 50s doo-wop band, Rabban Gamliel and the elders. Okay. Shayum Subin Bevet Baitos Ben Zunin Belod. Now they're in Lod, in this particular fellow's house, who may have been a wealthy person who hosted it. They're there. And of course, you'll see this is Pesach night. So you see Rabban Gamliel in Lod, where all those other rabbis were, but weren't there that night. Vayu asukin behilchot ha-Pesach. What were they doing? They were studying the laws of the Korban Pesach. Kol halayla ad krot hagevur. All night, they were studying the laws of Pesach all the way until dawn. Higbihu milifnehen. Now listen, get careful of the words. They then picked up, and it's what this sounds like is they picked up the tray for the food, v'no'adu, or in another text, v'na'ninaru, which means to shake off the crumbs. V'achula and the Beit HaMidrash. So what were these rabbis doing all night? They were up all night. They were talking. What were they talking about? They were not talking about the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. What were they talking about? The laws of Korban Pesach. And at the very end, it seems, it's not 100% clear, it seems that they then got up and shook the table off. In other words, cleaned the table off, which means there was food on the table the whole time. Let's see what this is. Now, what's on your Seder plate? What's on the Seder plate? What do you have there?
Zeroa.
Okay, Zeroa. This is Zeroa. You have a little shank bone. Good. Why have a shank bone? Why is there a shank bone?
Korban Pesach.
Okay, so in other words, it's not so much a shank bone. It's that you have to have two cooked items on the table, right? Right. So we use a shank bone and an egg. By the way, Rava suggested you use rice as an example. As Talmidim Dafki used rice because that was the example he gave. Gemara Psachim. But we use a shank bone and an egg, and we use them to commemorate the two korbanot that are not there. Let me show you how that was done in Yavne, or in the generation of Yavne, and through the Mishnaic period, and even later in Eretz Yisrael. Take a look at this Mishnah from Masachet Eduyot. Rabban Gamliel, is a series of things that Rabban Gamliel said in Mishnah Yud Bet. Mishnah Yud Gimel, he had several things on which he was on the lenient side, and one of them was Osin Gdim Mikulas Belele Psachim. Rabban Gamliel was of the position that you know what you should have at the meal? A roasted full goat. Gdim Mikulas means that it's there on the spit. Just like Korban Pesach. Now, this is after the Korban. And there was clearly a minhag to have the Gedim Mikulas as the Seder meal after the Korban. Very interesting. Chachamim Osrin. The other sages banned it. They said you may not have it for very good reason, because it's going to look as if you're eating korbanot outside of the Beit HaMikdash. And here we have further explication. The Tosefta in Masachet Beitzah details. Ezehu Gdim Mikulas. What's a Gdim Mikulas that Rabbi Gamliel promotes? Rosh Tzli, Kulot Tzli, it's all roasted. Rosho Kra'av Kirbo. It has the head, the legs, the insides, right? And etc. If you cook a little bit, you boil a little bit, it's not called Gdim Mikulas. Okay, now. Osin Gdim Mikulas B'Yom Terishon Shachag. You're allowed to make it for the first day of Sukkot or the last day of Pesach. You're allowed to make a calf that is Mikulas even for the first day of Pesach, because a calf is not Korban Pesach. Avalog Gdim Mikulas. The position of the Tosefta is you may not make Gdim Mikulas for your Seder. That's the position of Chachamim, who said you may not do it. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi tells a story. Todos, Theodore, Ish Romi. Right? He was a Jew, lived in Rome. Hinhig et Bnei Romi. He was a wealthy man, and he led them to do the following. Likach Tzla'im Belele Psachim. He encouraged them in Rome, after the Korban, to take lambs and to buy them for the Seder meal. To make them mikulas, in other words, exactly like a korban pesach. Amrulo. So, what was the answer to Todos? Why the rabbis said you shouldn't do it? Hafu karov lachil kodashim b'chutz. It looks like you're feeding them korbanot away from the Beit Hamikdash. Shukrin otam psachim, because they call it Paschal lamb. They're calling it psachim. They're not calling it the make believe. They're not calling it the nice lamb. They call it the Paschal lamb. And therefore, it looks like you're having the meat kodashim outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Very interesting. What's going on here? So, here's what seems to be the story. The first thing is that this story that we read about the five Chachamim, all the evidence points, and there's a huge dispute among the scholars about this, but all the evidence seems to point to this story being a later story. What's the importance of it? Because you have the following crisis taking place after the Korban Beit HaMikdash, specifically around Pesach. Because Pesach, more than anything else, is a festival where we're participating in the Beit HaMikdash is central and core. Sukkot is, by with no question, the biggest festival of the Beit HaMikdash. But on a personal and familial level, Pesach is the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Everybody comes to Beit HaMikdash, brings their Korban Pesach, eats it, stays overnight, then brings their Chagigah and their Olat Riyah, then goes home. Pesach. What do you do with the Korban? So we go in two opposite directions. Rabban Gamliel takes one direction. What's his direction? We're going to sit and study Hilchot Korban Pesach. And we have the lamb in front of us. We're acting out as if it's there. As if it's there. That's one approach. That's Rabban Gamliel. However, there's another approach, which we find embodied in Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues. And that's why this story is placed in Bnei Brak, Rabbi Akiva's town. And that is that we have to anticipate redemption and use the Seder as a way of looking forward to a redemption, and that we have to see our experience right now as being tantamount to Mitzrayim, and we're anticipating Yitziat Mitzrayim. What's the famous addition that Rabbi Akiva puts into the bracha at the end of Magid? Just like Hashem redeemed us, similarly, he'll redeem us in the future and bring us back to rebuild the Mikdash, etc. That's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's position is that we have to take Leil HaSeder and turn it from backwards to forwards to anticipating Geulah, anticipating redemption. And therefore, what do the sages in this story do? They talk about Yitziat Mitzrayim. They talk about the story. Rabbi Gamliel doesn't look back, doesn't look forward, he looks present. And he says, here we are with the Beit HaMikdash, Ki'ilu. We have the lamb in front of us. It's all there. And we're going to talk about the laws of Hilchot Pesach, which is the laws of Pesach, of the Korban Pesach, which is the model. So now let's see what Rabbi Akiva, who, by the way, won. Rabbi Akiva won. Which one of those paragraphs got into the Haggadah? Not Rabbi Gamliel, but the other one, with the story of the staying up all night. Rabbi Akiva won. And let me show you why Rabbi Akiva won. Remember the phrase that we saw, Hare Ani Kaven Shivim Shana? We said, ooh, that's because of the hair. And we said, that may not be the case. If you take a look at this Mechilta, you see that Hare Ani Kaven Shivim Shana is not only Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Here, Rabbi Yoshua, in a very famous story, says when the students come, he said, ooh, I've never heard such a great thing. I'm like 7 years old, never heard such a great thing. However, in the Ketav Yad, you actually see it says, I'm like 80 years old, which means it's a way of saying I'm about 80. That's how old he really was. Which means when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Hare Ani Kaven Shivim Shana, it means I'm about 70. My whole life I've been lobbying to get this passed and it didn't work. But why mention the 70 years? Who cares? Because what's 70 years? 70 years takes us back to the prophecy of Yirmiyahu. But for 70 years, you'll be in exile, and then you'll be redeemed. The famous sugya about Achashverosh and his cheshbon about 70 years. I'm like 70 years, meaning I'm anticipating redemption. And that's why at the end of this paragraph, we bring the other piece about Yimot HaMashiach. Because what they have done is turned the Pesach into an anticipation of Mashiach coming. That's why that paragraph's in there. And that's why this whole story in Bnei Brak is so critical. And when the rabbis come along and say, when the students come along and say, Higi Azman Kriyat Shema Shel Shachari, what they're really signaling is the dawn has come and it's time for redemption. This whole piece is about how we should view Pesach. Do we view Pesach as Beit HaMikdash, let's pretend it's still there, Gdi Mikulas, etc.? Or do we rather look at our reality today in first, at the end of the first century, being in the second century in Eretz Yisrael, as being like in Mitzrayim, we're under foreign rule, and we're anticipating a redemption? That's the position that ends up winning the day. And so you see, and you see several proofs here on the pages that indicate that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah really was older at this point. So the mention of his age is specifically an allusion to the whole messianic anticipation that gets put into the Seder. The Seder up until this point, up until the destruction, the Seder was about the past, and that was it. It was about a celebration of the past. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim. With the destruction, we entered an era of conflict of how best to commemorate it. Rabbi Gamliel and his school, which is the Seder in Lod, studies Hilchot Pesach, and they have the Gedi Mikulas in front of them as if we're still there. And by the way, where does Rabbi Gamliel, yes, show up in the Seder? He shows up in the Haggadah when he says, you have to explain three things. Which three things? Pesach, Matzah, Maror. Because in Rabbi Gamliel's house, they're all three in front of him. Pesach, he points to the lamb. Matzah, Maror. You have to explain them. And so there's a piece of Rabbi Gamliel that gets into the Haggadah, but the driving force already foreshadowed at the beginning is the messianic anticipation of Hare Ani Kaven Shivim Shana and Lahavi Limot HaMashiach. And so it changes the entire tenor of the evening. And like I said, Rabbi Akiva's position or Rabbi Akiva's approach is the one that ended up making it through the generations, and Rabbi Gamliel's became a shadow towards the end of Magid. And as a matter of fact, what do we say? We don't say Pesach Zu Ella, Pesach Shayu Avotenu Ochlim Bizman Shabbat Hamikdash Kayam. And then a few minutes later, what do we say? V'nochal sham minha zvachim minapsachim. In other words, we specifically turn Pesach into a thing of the past and a thing of the future, an anticipated future, but no longer a thing of the present. And so hopefully we get a better insight into what this whole story of the Chachamim Bnei Brak is about. And what the addition of the Mishnah with Yimei Chayecha Livoda Moto Mashiach and the whole mention of Shivim Shana might be hinting to. When I mentioned earlier about the story of the five Chachamim, as I said, there's too many difficulties in this story, including Rabbi Eliezer's explicit opinion that you should study Hilchot Pesach till midnight, and here he's up all night talking about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, indicate that this story is really a later reworking of a story in Bavel, that the purpose of it is, of course, to telegraph the message that I just shared with you. All right. I don't know if we're meeting next week because it's very close to Pesach. I'll leave you guys. But in any case, if we don't have a chance, then I want to wish everybody a Chag Kasher Sameach. And hopefully this will add something to your Seder.